morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Trump is gone. Hallelujah. Time to disinfect the White House. Sweep it for booby traps and other intentionally left behind snares by a trumped up sore loser who considered it his birthright to remain supreme leader of the USA. He even wanted a military parade for his reluctant departure. He lusted for parades to honor him, but Pentagon chiefs refused to do him the honor. One of his last acts as president was to greenlight federal prison executions, a final killing, so to speak, while simultaneously granting pardons to unsavory cohorts, especially those willing to contribute to a possible return to the people's house, which to him has been his own personal real estate. It would be absolutely awesome and joyful to optimistically hope that the wretched squalor that has permeated American politics for four bitter and degraded years has finally come to an end. Unfortunately, like the deathly pandemic that pervades the nation as a consequence of abject incompetence, corruption, and negligence from America's highest office, this is not the end of Trumpism or the fetid subculture of ignorant, prejudicial nativism that roils the national heart and soul so explosively. Donald Trump has been evicted from the Mar a Blanco against his will, despite his furious and disingenuous refusal to concede that Joe Biden won the presidency fair and square. But the diseased corruption of Trumpism remains pervasive and malignantly volatile. The malodorous plague that is Donald Trump will continue to contaminate the USA for a long while after his banishment into the sludge of disingenuously distorted history. The after effects of the Civil War between the states lasted long into the 20th century. Its egregious legacy, the Ku Klux Klan and Jim Crow, now replicates then. As a result of Donald Trump, the USA has, in the appraisal of critics, pundits, and nighttime TV comics, regurgitated as a democracy. Trump has also devolved as the democracy's worst president, which must be a relief to G.W. Bush. He has also been the most glaringly despicable, the black hole angst of everything this flawed and fragile constitutional republic has attempted to be and stand for. He has been the snarling avatar of violence and hatred, in particular regarding non-white and impoverished nonpartisans. Yet personally, underneath a fatty, fatuous layer of protective raging bluster, he is a quintessential physical and moral coward, confusing narcissistic pomposity for godly pretext, in either sense, counterfeit like everything else about him. A woman who refused to sell him property during his Atlantic City, New Jersey gambler mogul guise called Trump a maggot, a cockroach, and a crumb. Trump's natural instincts have always been ugly, petulant narcissism mixed with wrathful cruelty, to hurt and denigrate people personally and en masse. Perversely similar to what time and space is theorized to be, Donald Trump's presidency seems to have emerged from the darkest malignancies of psychosis and depravity. Trump's feral penchant for savagely disruptive chaos and alternate veracities escalated in variant discord, an oscillation of false tropes perpetrated by his ferociously noxious narcissism. Trump represents an anti-intellectual refutation of world evolution toward unity of the human species. He despises fusion, embraces turmoil, and atavistic white supremacist nationalism. Hate and fear are his dogma. He makes a false boast or a pernicious lie, and either is instantly real to him because he said it. Facts and reality be damned. Trump is a fraud who has cheated, lied, and demeaned nearly anyone and everyone all his life, and he demands absolute loyalty from all, though he never reciprocates in return. Yet a significant number of Americans, mostly white malcontents, pledge loyalty to him, or worse, profess to worship him, and many others are simply afraid to cross him for personal or political reasons, which, paradoxical to his meager character underneath the rancorous and self-glorifying deceit, has made him quite possibly the most spuriously delusional chief executive in American history. The Trump presidency from the start implemented what white nationalists sardonically call peaceful ethnic cleansing, with SWAT-armed ICE agents rounding up mostly non-white undocumented immigrants, none from Norway, Sweden, or Iceland, and imprisoning them before deportation, severing children from their parents, whether so-called illegal residents or refugees. The raids on this side of the southern border, in American cities and towns, resembled old propaganda newsreels of Nazi mass arresting Jews, worth mention despite criticisms of Nazi comparisons to Trumpian policies. Racism and racially inspired religious intolerance has been the pillar upon which the totalitarian Trumpists affix to totally sequester and remake the Yankee Doodle democracy into a monarchical caricature with Donald Trump as de facto dictator, except democracy has ultimately trumped Trump. The Constitution has many enemies, foreign and domestic. However, its most persistent detractors have been homespun zealots or power-hungry wannabes. Domestic politics in the USA have become as severe and confrontational as the Cold War. No mercy for the other side, and intimidation into obedience with narrow and flogging perceptions of democracy that disrupts, undermines, and betrays the majority. But that has always been a problem of majority rule. A majority is easily bullied to bully. The flagrant laceration of deep-seated inferiority feelings of white Americans to react with fear and loathing against non-white minorities, to ethnically cleanse abnormal Americans from society. True Americans are cajoled to eradicate fake or untrue Americans. The irony is that it is usually a minority of Americans of various skin shades and ethnicities, white, black, brown, Asian, Latvian, and Polak, who strive to protect the liberties and equalities for the majority, just as it is usually other minorities, political rather than racial or ethnic, who crave raw power and will do whatever to attain and keep it. Trump is in a singular category in himself, essentially because he violated every semblance of orthodoxy. He publicly invited the Russians to destroy his opponent in his first presidential campaign and ranted she should be jailed or shot. In both elections, he bragged that if he lost, it would be obvious that the election was rigged against him, and he called for armed insurrection. So, how many ways can the same indictments be made? How many ways to say that Trump twice threatened to usurp the vote with accusations of fraud if he lost, his only proof being that he lost? How many ways can it be affirmed that Donald Trump has, from his first moment as President of the United States, insidiously demonstrated contempt for the Constitution and especially the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment in particular, though he was all right with the Second? How often must it be reiterated that Trump and his corrupt bullies, sycophants, shysters, and lickspittles, and just plain suck-ups, attempted to decapitate democracy? This is most likely, at least one would hope, the finale of Trump the man. He is to be impeached for a second time, and a few jails await him. But Trump, the odious icon, will remain floating above America like a menacing Macy's balloon for a long time to come. Yesterday, January 20th, 2021, Joseph R. Biden was sworn in as the 47th president, and Kamala Harris became the first woman, as well as racially mixed Black and Asian vice president. We must end this uncivil war, the new president said. And so America's venomous Caligula Nero, who was neither murdered by the mob or assassinated by his own Praetorian guard, flies off the screen into exile like a deposed tyrant, leaving behind nearly 400,000 dead Americans from the coronavirus as testimony to his failed and grotesque presidency. Trump's official portrait ought to have been painted in various fiery shades of red, as though his bloated face was a poster of demagogic psychosis. He should be fulminated, open-mouth rage, staring straight out from the frame to intimidate everyone who dares to look, and his malevolent and gigantic eyes, the maniacal glare of manifest despotism. And that was a final rant, perhaps, about Trump that I have written. And now, by Robert Reich. Joe Biden cannot govern from the center. Quashing Trumpism demands radical action. I keep hearing that Joe Biden will govern from the center. He has no choice, they say, because he will have razor-thin majorities in Congress and the Republican Party has moved to the right. Rubbish. I've served several Democratic presidents who have needed Republican votes, but the Republicans now in Congress are nothing like those I have dealt with. Most of today's GOP live in a parallel universe. There's no center between the reality-based world and theirs. Two Wednesdays ago, fully 93% of House Republicans voted against impeaching Trump for inciting insurrection, even after his attempted coup threatened their very lives. The week before, immediately following the raid on the Capitol, two-thirds of House Republicans and eight Republican senators refused to certify election results on the basis of Trump's lies about widespread fraud. Lies rejected by 60 federal judges, as well as Trump's own Departments of Justice and Homeland Security. Prior to the raid, several Republican members of Congress repeated those lies on television and Twitter and at Stop the Steal events, encouraging Trump followers to fight for America and start kicking ass. This is the culmination of the growing insanity of the GOP over the last 4 years. Trump has remade the Republican Party into a white supremacist cult living within a counterfactual wonderland of lies and conspiracies. More than half of Republican voters, almost 40 million people, believe Trump won the 2020 race. 45% support the storming of the Capitol. 57% say he should be the Republican candidate in 2024. In this hermetically sealed cosmos, most Republicans believe Black Lives Matter protesters are violent, immigrants are dangerous, and the climate crisis doesn't pose a threat. A growing fringe openly talks of redressing grievances through violence, including QAnon conspiracy theorists, of whom two are newly elected to Congress, who think Democrats are running a global child sex trafficking operation. How can Biden possibly be a centrist in this new political world? There is no middle ground between lies and facts. There is no halfway point between civil discourse and violence. There is no mid-range between democracy and fascism. Biden must boldly and unreservedly speak truth refuse to compromise with violent Trumpism and ceaselessly fight for democracy and inclusion. Speaking truth means responding to the world as it is and denouncing the poisonous deceptions engulfing the right. It means repudiating false equivalences and both sides-ism that gives equal weight to trumpery and truth. It means protecting and advancing science, standing on the side of logic, calling out deceit, and impugning baseless conspiracy theories and those who abet them. Refusing to compromise with violent Trumpism means renouncing the lawlessness of Trump and his enablers and punishing all who looted the public trust. It means convicting Trump of impeachable offenses and ensuring he can never again hold public office, not as a distraction from Biden's agenda, but as a central means of reestablishing civility, which must be a cornerstone of that agenda. Strengthening democracy means getting big money out of politics, strengthening voting rights, and fighting voter suppression in all its forms. It means boldly advancing the needs of average people over the plutocrats and oligarchs, of the white working class as well as black and Latino people. It means embracing the ongoing struggle for racial justice and the struggle of blue-collar workers whose fortunes have been declining for decades. The moment calls for public investment on a scale far greater than necessary for COVID relief or stimulus, large enough to begin the restructuring of the economy. America needs to create a vast number of new jobs, leading to higher wages, reversing racial exclusion as well as the downward trajectory of Americans whose anger and resentment Trump cynically exploited. This would include universal early childhood education, universal access to the internet, world-class schools and public universities accessible to all, converting to solar and wind energy, and making America's entire stock of housing and commercial buildings carbon neutral. Investing in basic research, the gateway to the technologies of the future, as well as national security, along with public health and universal health care. It is not a question of affordability. Such an agenda won't burden future generations. It will reduce the burden on future generations. It is a question of political will. It requires a recognition that there is no longer a center, but a future based either on lies, violence, and authoritarianism, or on unyielding truth, unshakable civility, and radical inclusion. And it requires a passionate, uncompromising commitment to the latter. And that was Joe Biden Cannot Govern from the Center by Robert Reich, who is a former U.S. Secretary of Labor, professor of public policy at the University of California at Berkeley, and the author of Saving Capitalism for the Many, Not the Few, and The Common Good. His new book, The System, Who Rigged It, How We Fix It, is out now. He is a columnist for Guardian USA, for which he wrote this article. And now, Bubbles, Dialogue, and the State of the Union by Dr. Robert Brake of Ocean Park, Washington. No doubt, the United States is acutely divided. We are Make America Great Again. We are gun rights and gun control. We are oil and coal. And we are climate change. We are tearing down Confederate monuments and building walls to keep immigrants out. We are marching and shouting, weeping and cheering. We are tweeting and sharing, and we are liking and unfriending. We are, in short, in turmoil. Political polarization is at an all-time high, and it's affecting us. Democrats and Republicans hold more disparate views of each other than ever before, a conflict causing gridlock in Washington, D.C., and having an impact closer to home. What can you do about it? You might avoid family gatherings, distance yourself from friends, or feel tense about interacting with coworkers. That divisiveness takes a toll on the mental health of the American people, with many adults reporting increased stress associated with political conflict. We're having trouble talking with and listening to people whose political views differ from our own. We choose news sources that support our beliefs, telling us what we want to hear and shielding us from opposing views. We are shying away from people and organizations whose positions may conflict with our own. We are taking refuge in echo chambers of like-minded people, expressing views we support, cheering each other on as we rake our common enemies over the coals. Within our bubbles, we are free from challenge, safe from alternative perspectives, and comforted by our own certainty. Made of soap and water, bubbles are beautiful, fun, and magical, but also fragile. The bubbles we create from political insulation are similarly unsustainable. If we can't survive outside of our bubbles, if we can't tolerate listening to our friends and families and neighbors, if we can't see beyond our own perspectives, if we view our fellow citizens as enemies, how can we ever sustain our relationships, our communities, or our country? Facing a chasm of political discord, you might feel frustrated, angry, motivated, discouraged, hopeless, energized, or exhausted. So how do you feel with those feelings? What actions can you take? Try dialogue. Dialogue offers the possibility of change, of shifting understandings and ideas and relationships. Dialogue can foment discovery. Dialogue can help us figure things out and learn through conversation. You can write to your elected representatives to advocate policy in line with your views. You can post on social media. You can organize with others to take local action. Or you can simply go about your life, trying to avoid interpersonal landmines. With all those options available, why then is dialogue, conversation with those on the other side, a worthwhile activity? How might it complement or replace those other options? Political divisiveness is challenging because of external conflict and the ways it can stir up people's intentional emotional state. Although you may view conversations with folks on the other side as a source of tension, they can, if skillfully approached, become a route to healing. Dialogue offers a means to navigate our way out of conflict. Try it. You might like it. And that was by Dr. Robert Brake of Ocean Park, Washington. And this is Michael McCusker. Dylan Hauser Schalk engineered this program. And a personal note, I would like to ask a psychiatrist why I am unable to understand why anyone would not see through Donald Trump as anything other than a despicable human gargoyle, unworthy of respect, regard, or any other feeling than contempt. Just because a new day is dawning politically, do not forget a pandemic is rampant. Continue to mask up and lock down as though your life and the lives of others depend on it, because they do.
In 76, the sky was red, thunder rumbling overhead. Bad King George couldn't sleep in his bed, and on that stormy morn, old Uncle Sam was born. Old Sam put on a three-cornered hat, and in a Richmond church he sat, and Patrick Henry told him that, while America drew breath, it was liberty or death.
What kind of hat is a three-cornered hat?
anybody who was anybody, they doubted it. Nobody had faith. Nobody, nobody but Washington, Tom Paine, Benjamin Franklin, Chaim Solomon, Crispus Attucks, Lafayette, nobody.
Nobody's running a tea party in Boston.
Betsy Ross organized a sewing circle.
Yeah, Paul Revere had a horse race.
And a little ragged bloke believed it. And some gentlemen and ladies believed it. And some wise men and some fools, and I believed it too. And you know who I am.
Oh, who are you, mister?
Yeah, how come all this?
Well, I'll tell you. Now let me...
Oh, let us tell you.
Tom Jefferson, a mighty fine man, he wrote it down in a mighty fine plan. The rest all sided with a mighty fine man, as they crossed their feet and nodded their eyes. Our grand old country did arrive. Ah, 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 ah.
And a mighty fine idea.
Adopted unanimously in Congress, July 4th, 1776.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights.
And among these rights are life.
Yes, sir.
Liberty.
That's right.
And the pursuit.
The very words.
That sure does sound mighty fine.
Building a nation is awful tough. The people found are going rough. The 13 states weren't large enough, so they started to expand into the Western world.
Still nobody anybody believed it. Everybody who was anybody, they stayed at home. But Lewis and Clark and the pioneers, driven by hunger, haunted by fears, the Klondike miners and the 49ers, some wanted freedom and some wanted riches. Some liked to loaf while others dug ditches. And I believe it too. And you know who I am.
No. Who are you, mister, anyway?
Well, I started to tell you.
Yes, mister.
Let my people go.
That's the idea.
Old Abe Lincoln was thin and long. His heart was high and his faith was strong. But he hated oppression, he hated wrong, and he went.